Case number 64237, Smith versus Napier. Ms. Wong.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. My name is Karen Wong, appearing on behalf of the appellant, Mr. Bradley Smith, and I would like to reserve 5 minutes of my time for rebuttal. Your Honors, the legal duty for child support is rooted in a parent's duty to support his or her children. Although a person could willingly choose to support an unrelated child, the law imposes no statutory duty of child support absent a parent-child relationship. That relationship is defined in NRS 126, Nevada's
parent. Before we get there, don't we have a stipulation? And again, I'm going to just cut to the chase. We have a stipulation by your client that he will provide support and parenting, if you will, for this child. Is that correct?
Your Honor, there was a stipulation that was incorporated into the divorce decree. However, I think that, to be fair, the stipulation, to interpret the stipulation, you need to look at the four corners of the document. The four corners of the document clearly show that Jaden was not a biological or a adopted child of the parties. The parties intended to adopt the child, and at that time there was the parties anticipated adoption, and there was no dispute over child support because child support can be ordered for adopted children. Now, our position is that child support should not have been ordered where adoption had not been completed, but this is only an issue because adoption was anticipated, and at this point, there's no longer any anticipation of adoption.
My concern, counsel, is it's kind of like any time two parties settle a case, whether it's $1 million personal injury case or a family law case, once they settle it, stipulate, it's stipulations ratified by court order, how can we legally undo that? Wouldn't that set justice on its side? You know, that's our concern, I think. We certainly understand the facts and probably the legal arguments you're making about there probably isn't normally an obligation for child support, but tell us how we get around that part.
Your Honor, I think you're right. In the normal case, a stipulation incorporated into an order is binding. However, for a child support order, that order has to conform to a statute. It has to conform to NRS 125B. When it hasn't conformed in the past, this court has said, we're going to change it. That order was not valid. So, for example...
Well, only not valid because there was fraud. That's, I believe, what the case law says, correct?
Respectfully, Your Honor, I don't believe that is true. For example, in Caldy v. Caldy, there was a case where a mother had agreed to a child support order, but it was lower than the statutory amount. 6 months later, she found out about statutory child support, and the court allowed her to conform the child support order to the statute. And similarly, in Jackson v. Jackson, no child support was ordered, and in that case, the court said, well, even though the party stipulated to no child support, we're going to conform it to the statute. Now, in Norris v. Norris, the case was a little bit different. The parties had stipulated to paying child support through the child's age of majority, which at that time was 21. After the child turned 18, the court said it had no power to further order child support because the child was no longer a minor. I think that's important because under the statute, the child has to be both a minor and a child in order for child support to be ordered. When the child is not a minor, the court doesn't have power to order that support. So imagine, for example, someone goes into a court, he's pro se, he doesn't understand the law fully, and he thinks that he owes child support for his 20-year-old son. All the parties agree he's going to pay child support for his 20-year-old son. Now, 6 months, a year later, he finds out, well, he didn't owe child support. That order shouldn't be enforceable against him for prospective payments. The original order was out of the power of the district court. And just because the parties didn't understand that law, because child support is, as this court held in Fernandez, it imposes super legal obligations because of federal and state child support statutes. I think that the child support order has to strictly conform to the statute.
Don't we have an issue truly with claim preclusion here? Your client was fully aware of the stipulation that he was making, the facts that he did not, he was not the child's biological father, that his obligation to pay child support, therefore, was something he did not have to agree to. I mean, he could have raised all of these issues below, and he chose not to.
Your Honor, claim preclusion requires three factors, and the first is obviously here, that the parties or their privies are the same. I've talked about the fact that we don't, my position is that the initial judgment was not valid, which is the second element of claim preclusion. And the third element is that the claims or issues could have been raised, but at that time, Mr. Smith anticipated the adoption. And at this time, he does not anticipate that adoption. And so I don't believe that this exact claim could have been raised because he thought that the adoption would occur. And in addition, NRS 125B provides for modification of a child support statute, of a child support order. And so because the circumstances have changed in terms of anticipation of adoption between the time of the initial order and now, I think both under that third factor of res judicata and under 125B, 125B's modification provisions, Mr. Smith should be allowed to modify his child support.
But isn't modification under SSAT usually based on change of financial circumstances of the parties? Do you think it goes that far to open it up to this type of situation?
I think, obviously, it usually applies to the financial circumstances of parties, and this is, in that regard, a very unusual case that a person had supported a child who was not his for many, many years, but that relationship has always been clear. So I think in this case, yes, that the modification provisions do extend that far because where there was an order that was entered that should never have been entered, I think the court's continuing jurisdiction over the child support order and its duty to render justice on judgments going forward. And each child support payment that becomes due is a new judgment of the court. So I think because of those unique circumstances for child support orders that the child support order should be allowed to be modified in this case.
Prospectively only.
Prospectively only. This court has made clear in the past that retroactive modification is not permissible, and even those judgments of past child support cannot even be voided. So Mr. Smith is not contesting that in this
and
case.
Is there an argument that the failure for the adoption to go through is a changed circumstance that justifies revising the order?
I'm sorry, Justice.
If the parties seem to have contemplated that the child was very on the verge of being adopted, and is it arguable that when that didn't come to pass, that's a changed circumstance vis-a-vis the ongoing child support obligation, or could you comment on that?
Yes, I definitely agree. I would even go further and say at the time of the divorce decree, the adoption process hadn't even started. The adoption decree said the parties will commence adoption proceedings after following the decree. And so that's certainly a change in circumstances because the parties had agreed to complete the adoption jointly, and now there's basically no hope of the adoption being completed. And we don't know why the adoption wasn't completed. In fact, the termination, the parental rights of Jaden's biological family haven't even been terminated. So I think public policy also supports allowing Mr. Smith to modify this decree. The ramifications are huge because Jaden still has a biological family whose parental rights have not been terminated. So in theory and practically speaking, Jaden could go back and move in with his mom. He could go in and move in with a relative, and Mr. Smith would be forced to pay Jaden's own biological family. He's being held to a higher standard than even Jaden's mother and father, legal mother and father, biological mother and father. It's the same in this case. Also, I think in family court, a lot of litigants appear pro se, and they may not understand the law completely. So I think that it's important that this court require child support orders to conform to the statute.
But these people were not pro se when the original divorce decree was entered, were they?
They were not pro se. But I think that the record reflects that they had an incorrect understanding of the law at that time, that the court and the litigants all misunderstood the law of whether child support can be ordered in the absence of a parent-child relationship. And so I think that if this court can make that clear to the parties and to future litigants, then that would be helpful going forward to be assured that they're only going to be held to what their legal obligations are and that they won't stipulate to something just because they didn't know.
Are you suggesting a sua sponte duty on the part of the court to ensure that every order that comes before it by way of stipulation is to be reviewed by the judge for legal stability?
I believe that is true in child support orders, Your Honor. I believe my time is up. Thank you.
Mr. Smith?
Thank you, Your Honor. Jordan Smith on behalf of Respondent Sherry Napier. And may it please the court. The district court correctly applied res judicata to deny Mr. Smith's motion to terminate child support for two reasons. First, a man may voluntarily agree to pay child support for a non-biological child by stipulating in a marital settlement agreement or otherwise failing to raise a paternity defense to a child support obligation in a divorce proceeding. Second, in the absence of fraud, such an order or stipulation will have claim preclusive effect between the parties in a subsequent proceeding. This court began to recognize these two principles as early as the Harris versus Harris decision, where this court held that a divorce decree bars relitigation of paternity as between the parties. The court expounded upon these two principles most recently in the Love versus Love decision, which is decisive of this appeal. In Love, like here, a man and woman entered into a marital settlement agreement where the man agreed to pay child support. That marital settlement agreement was then incorporated into a divorce decree. Subsequently, the man discovered that the child was not biologically his through DNA testing. In response to a motion to actually increase child support on behalf of the wife, the man moved for summary judgment to set aside the divorce decree and his child support obligations. On appeal, this court held that ordinarily, a stipulation between the parties in a marital settlement agreement has res judicata effect on the paternity issue in the context of child support in the absence of fraud. In Love, the court found that there were genuine issues of material fact regarding whether the man had actually been defrauded into believing the child was biologically his. The mother made an allegation that the father was aware of another possible instance of conception. In other words, in Love, this court held that if the man knew or should have known that the child was not biologically his at the time he entered into the marital settlement agreement, the fraud exception would not apply and he would be claim precluded from relitigating paternity to avoid his child support obligations.
But here, the parties were forthright. They both disclosed this child was not biologically theirs and that in the future they intended to adopt this child and to go forward with that. That was disclosed. It was a condition of this undertaking, arguably. So why is it not, when that doesn't come to fruition, it was straightforward, it didn't happen, why are they not entitled to come back and say, change circumstance, this child support obligation is inappropriate because this being did not become my child?
I would dispute Your Honor's characterization of the adoption or joint guardianship as a condition of the marital settlement agreement. Mr. Smith's child support obligation was not made contingent upon the adoption going forward and not made contingent on the joint guardianship going forward. The marital settlement agreement could have been structured that way, I imagine, but here...
So it could have been? I mean, they could have made one that said, if this adoption does not come to pass, then the child support obligation shall cease?
Or, for example, Mr. Smith's child support obligation doesn't arise until the adoption is completed or a joint guardianship has gone through. And that's not the structure of the agreement here. The structure of the agreement is that Mr. Smith has a child support obligation for Jaden and his siblings, and within 90 days or 30 days for the adoption, they'll contact an attorney, or within 90 days, they'll start the joint guardianship process. But his child support obligation was not made contingent upon those happenings. And to address your earlier question, Justice Pickering, about whether those constitute a changed circumstance, the failure to complete the adoption and the failure to complete a joint guardianship were not changed circumstances at the time Mr. Smith moved to terminate child support. Recall that in the record, in August of 2011, Mr. Smith moved to modify child support, not claiming that he wasn't the child's father, not claiming he didn't have any responsibility. The sole basis for the motion to modify was that he'd recently retired and there was a reduction in his income. At the time that he moved to modify, the deadlines within the marital settlement agreement to complete the adoption and the joint guardianship had already expired, yet Mr. Smith didn't raise those issues in his motion to modify. So at the time of the motion to terminate child support, the failure to complete the adoption and the failure to complete the joint guardianship were not changed circumstances that could have been an alternative ground to move to terminate.
Right.
The same is also true of Ms. Napier's sole guardianship. The motion to modify references the fact that the sole guardianship was in process, that Ms. Napier was pursuing a joint guardianship. At the time the motion to modify was resolved by stipulation in January and February of 2012, Ms. Napier's sole guardianship had already been completed. Mr. Smith received notice of that. He was listed, you can see in the document at page 383 of the record, that Mr. Smith did receive notice of the sole guardianship, and that was completed before the parties resolved the motion to modify in February of 2012. So Ms. Napier's sole guardianship also wasn't a changed circumstance at the time of the motion to modify.
But your client did not raise claim preclusion. That was a sua sponte decision by the district court, correct?
That's correct.
Was that a game changer in terms of the arguments you're now making?
The district court's sua sponte reliance upon res judicata does preserve the claim preclusion issue for appeal. My client, appearing opposing the motion to terminate pro se, didn't raise res judicata, but the district court's, I would argue the district court had an obligation to raise res judicata because it involved a child support order which implicates the child's best interest.
I don't have a problem with that. I think I was unclear. Does the fact that that was brought into the proceeding by the district court judge and not directly by the party weaken your arguments that the motion practice was somehow flawed in terms of what it asked for in terms of requesting to terminate?
No, Your Honor, I don't believe so. Mr. Smith was aware at the time he moved to terminate that he also could have sought modification. Again, in August of 2011 when he was represented by counsel, he moved to modify then. He could have made the same request in conjunction with or in the alternative of his motion to modify at the time he moved to terminate, and he did not do so. And one final point on the changed circumstances. Most obviously, his parental status was not a changed circumstance at the time he moved to modify, moved to terminate child support. This isn't a case where Mr. Smith all of a sudden discovered, like in Love or in the Libro case, that he wasn't the child's biological father. He knew before the marital settlement agreement, before the motion to modify, that he was not the biological father of Jaden, but nonetheless didn't raise those issues.
Mr. Smith, before you proceed, Justice Pickering raised an interesting question in my mind that goes back to the claim preclusion analysis. And if, in fact, the stipulation here had been worded the way the two of you discussed, essentially a self-executing order, but if this, then that, does that mean that every order that's written that way is not subject to claim preclusion? I mean, if you have a condition in an order that has not been fulfilled at the time the order is entered, does that then subsequently mean it's not subject to a claim preclusion analysis?
It may not be subject to claim preclusion until that condition occurs. But once the condition occurs, in this case completing the adoption, then I would think that the child support obligation is in full force and effect, and at that point claim preclusion would apply.
Okay. Thank you for entertaining my hypothetical. Thank you.
No problem. Each one of the three orders that we've been discussing this morning, the marital settlement agreement and subsequent divorce decree, the order, stipulation order resolving the motion to modify child support, and the special master's order in Douglas County, and I should mention that order. There's some confusion about the status of the March 2013 order in Douglas County, the special master's findings. That wasn't part of the initial divorce proceeding. You'll notice that when the divorce proceeding was first initiated, it was filed in Douglas County and had an 08DI case number. Then in 2012, the summer of 2012 in July, Mr. Smith transferred the case to Washoe County, and then it was given a DV-12 case number. The special master's findings back in Douglas County in March of 2013 has a UR case number, so it's a separate proceeding. And at that hearing, Mr. Smith was present with Ms. Napier and along with the Douglas County District Attorney. And that and the special master made a specific finding that Mr. Smith is a parent of Jaden with an obligation of support. That order also specifically advised Mr. Smith that he had 30 days in which to object, and he did not do so. The result of that order is that it became a final judgment order. On appeal, Mr. Smith attacks the second element of claim preclusion, that there wasn't none of the three orders constitute a valid final judgment. The briefing focuses specifically on the original marital settlement agreement and divorce decree. There's no argument advanced in the briefs aimed directly at the stipulation order regarding the motion to modify or the special master's findings of fact and recommendations later on. And for the court's convenience, the special master's orders can be found at page 393 of the record.
Did the district court in Douglas County participate in that case, or was it just the special master, do you recall?
The special master made findings and recommendations, and you'll notice, again, I believe it's at page 393 of the record, that the district court then signed off on the findings and recommendations.
Do you remember who the district judge was that signed off?
I do not, Your Honor.
Okay.
So once those three orders were entered, Mr. Smith could have raised his defense to his non-paternity defense as a defense to paying child support in the marital settlement agreement, the stipulation order resolving the motion to modify, and in response to that hearing in front of the special master, and he did not do so. His failure to do so claim precludes him from raising those issues later on in the proceedings. And unless the court has any further questions, yes, the district court be affirmed. Thank you.
Thank you. And in rebuttal, Ms. Wong.
Your Honors, I'd like to first respond again to your final question to me earlier about the sua sponte duty of courts to ensure that a child support order conforms to the statute. I believe this is already law in numerous cases where a court has ordered child support that was not in conformity with the statute. The court has said, well, that's either invalid or we're going to allow modification. So that has been true in Norris, in Caldy, in Jackson, and other cases. And I also want to respond to respondents' discussion of the two subsequent orders of the district court. The first of those was on Mr. Smith's motion to modify, which was entered about 2 or 3 weeks after the guardianship order was entered. And my understanding of the record is that the parties had stipulated, had worked out an agreement beforehand, and it's not clear exactly when Mr. Smith received notice of the guardianship order. In any case, I think that the change in circumstances signaled by the guardianship order in this case, but it's not determinative. Mr. Smith has said in his pleadings that in 2011, Jaden informed him that he did not want to have any further contact with Mr. Smith. And Mr. Smith continued to hold out hope and expectation that that would change, that they could establish that parent-child relationship. But over the years since 2011, it has become apparent that that is not possible. I would also like to address the Douglas County order, which was which began as an enforcement order. And under the statute, an enforcement order can cover arrearages in jurisdiction. Those are the permissible bounds of what the district court can order in an enforcement action. The parties obviously at this point were confused procedurally. As Justice Pickering mentioned, the respondent did not raise the issue of claim preclusion earlier. But I would contend that Mr. Smith's motion to modify in the original divorce action was the proper venue for that. So this happened within a month after the Douglas County enforcement action was resolved, that he sought to modify the child support order in his divorce action. And really, the Douglas County court had no power to modify the divorce decree in that regard. It only had the power to address arrearages. I'd also like to address the change in circumstances and just point out that in cases like Love, where a father or a man years later finds out that he's not the biological father of a child, in those cases, the district court has made a finding that the father is the biological father of the child. And when you're found to be the biological father of the child, that characteristic is immutable. That can never change in your lifetime. But when the finding, so-called finding, is based on adoption in the future, then that's definitely a characteristic that can be changed. Regarding the respondent's proposal that the parties should have engaged in a contingent settlement agreement. I would argue that all settlement agreements are by nature contingent. Parties specify to certain things with the expectation that they're going to get other things in return.
Ms. Wong, I have a question. You came back, rightfully so, with the response to my question about sua sponte findings, and you've just, I think, distinguished the Love line of cases. But here's my question. If we were to adopt the reasoning that you suggest with respect to being certain that judges find orders to be consistent with or in compliance with statutory guidelines regarding child support and various other matters, how do we get around the fact that this court was presented with a stipulation of the parties to take care of all the issues that we're talking about here today? Would you have the court set aside that stipulation or reject that stipulation because it is not consistent with the law regarding a man's obligation to support a child?
Your Honor, I would say that the parties can stipulate to payments, but they would not be statutory child support obligations entitled to enforcement under federal and state child support enforcement laws.
Thank you, Ms. Wong. Other questions? Thank you, both of you, for your fine work and your briefs here today. This matter will stand submitted. We will be in a